Some years ago, I confessed to a shameful little secret that at times and in phases, I am a pro wrestling fan. It tastes dirty even saying that. It is what it is. I'm sure all of you have your little secrets that you'd be embarrassed to admit to. And that's okay. If you ever need someone to confess to, especially if it's something as ridiculous as, say, enjoying a fake sport, talk to me. Anyway, before he became one of the most prolific box office draws in cinema, Dwayne Johnson was known as the most electrifying man in sports entertainment. He went by the wrestling moniker, The Rock. Saving you from a pointless venture to outright dribble, I'll synthesize his in-ring career by highlighting some of the catchphrases that he got over huge with the fans. For starters, he brought into their public consciousness a strange enjoyment for calling someone worthy of derision, a jabroni. He then trademarked the facial expression of ironic disbelief, the people's eyebrow. And ultimately, he even asked if he could smell what he was cooking. He agreed with all of his points. Rest assured, I won't be asking if you can smell what I'm cooking by the end of the sermon. But chief amongst his jabs was the notion to know your role and shut your mouth. And in comparison to him, it doesn't matter who you are or what you think. And this last line, he would yell into the microphone, interrupting whoever was talking, whoever had appeared, putting them in their place, much to the delight of the people at hand. And so, if The Rock was a biblical character, walking around in the time of kings, I could so see him grabbing like a ram's horn, interrupting Naaman's little tantrum, saying, "Hey, Naaman, who wrote that letter for you?" And right as Naaman began to formulate his response, "It doesn't matter who wrote that letter for you." Recall in our first text from this morning, Naaman was said to be a great man, a commander of an army, a mighty warrior armed with chariots, horses, pounds of gold, silver, garments, and also with an esteemed letter written to him by the king of Aram. One look at this guy, and you would have thought, he must be something. Unfortunately, this guy was also infirmed and was in desperate want of a cure. He hears from a slave girl that there's a prophet in the adversarial region of Samaria. Aram was in Syria, Samaria being in Israel, and this prophet might do something for him, and so he sets off on course, flanked by all of his power and his incredible wealth. But when he arrives at the very footstep of that remedy, and he hears of the simplest solution to his problems, to just bathe in the river Jordan, instead of just being like, "Oh, awesome, that's easy," he dives into insufferable meltdown. He said, "How dare the king of Israel not meet with me? How dare he instead send his prophet Elisha to stay in his house and also not meet with me? And how dare that prophet send his lowly messenger to tell me third hand? I don't have anything of it." And so, off in a rage, he shuffles away like a toddler with his sickness still in tow. "Just go in and bathe," his friends urge him. "You've come all this way and shortcomings, who know our sins, who know our skeletons. Instead of owning up to them, instead of being humbled by them, we instead become a walking parody of ourselves and the titles that we hold, grandiose illusions of authority. And so, equally devoid of having any sense or shred of self-awareness, we don't stop our sick thoughts from reaching our lips, but we make it our daily meditation to prop ourselves up by tearing others down, dehumanizing others, to deify ourselves. Just like Haman, we so often expect everyone else to adapt to our presence, to marvel at our wealth, to congratulate our accomplishments, to covet our references. But just like Haman, we will all one day be faced with the simplest of truths that none of them ever really mattered. For in the end, those things will be like nothing. For the grand scheme of life, we are just a blip. We are dust. Just another Homo sapien, amidst a multitude of species, breathed into the same creation by the same authority who equalizes us all as the rightful children of God. Fittingly, Elisha never says a word to Haman in our text. He never addresses him directly. He never meets him at all. Elisha, looking out of his window, I imagine, is like shaking off the dust of his sandals that Mark had read in the Luke text. He must be thinking, this guy, Haman, just know your role and shut your mouth. It doesn't matter who you are or what you think, for you are just like everyone else here, Haman. Nothing more, nothing less. Don't get angry at that realization. Don't get mad and tweet and stomp your feet. Join in and go to the war. Like everyone else here in this community of life, you must carry the load that you've been elected to carry. So stop being a burden on the rest of us. Mercifully, at the end of our story, Haman finally comes around. He finally listens to the reasoning of his peers. He follows the steps given to him by Elisha's messenger. And he humbles himself in the presence of the Samaritans, who no doubt he had just harbored an extreme prejudice against. He bathed 7 times in their river, and amongst them, tethered to the source of their life, he is cured. To the source of their life, he is cured. Timeless and appropriate, I'd say. My friends, it doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter. The color of your skin, the fat that you raise, the XX, the XY, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how much money you have, what college you went to, it doesn't matter how many friends you've got by your side. We are all equalized by our common mortality, a common infirmity. Earthquakes, hurricanes, fires, storms, injuries, sadness, regrets, grief, sin. It gets us all. We are all nomads on God's earth, in God's nation, seeking asylum for a better chance at life. We are all equalized in our common humanity. By God and God's wisdom of divine impartiality, we have been all made to come as we are, whoever we